giving you equal access to smart reporting, shady commentary, and biting analysis from a diverse perspective. This is Affirmative Reaction con Jorge Olivares.
Everyone, and welcome back to Affirmative Reaction here on SiriusXM Progress Channel 127. I'm your host, Jorge Olivares. Now, it's only appropriate that we're having this conversation in the Mad Dog studio for the MLB Network because of who my next guest is. Now, my next guest, he doesn't know this, but 5 years ago when I was still working on the LGBT channel here at SiriusXM, I was working in the news division. One of the biggest stories that we dealt with was you being named as the Ambassador for Inclusion for the MLB, because back in 2014, the summer of 2014, former MLB player Billy Beane was announced as the new Ambassador for Inclusion after having come out several years before, talking about how the league in and of itself and the sport, there was a desire to make it more inclusive and to allow people who may be closeted or people who might not feel like that space is welcome to them, that they can play, that they can be just like anybody else and that they can be a part of the league. And so for the past 5 years, my next guest, Billy Beane, has served in this role after having played himself for several years. And I'm very excited to welcome Billy to the show to talk about what this role has meant over the past 5 years, how it's changed over the past five years, and how MLB is now a different league because of the inclusion of Billy onto the team. So, Billy, thanks so much for spending this next hour with me.
Well, thank you for that wonderful introduction. Yeah, it's incredible how fast time goes by. It's, you know, 5.5 years of just really a whole amazing direction and opportunity that MLB provided, bringing me back to baseball. And it's where we were then and where we are now. If I could have had any kind of inclination of what to or what my expectations were, there was really no definition for the position. It really was spurred by a gentleman who is a great colleague of mine, Paul Mifsud, and our boss, Dan Halem, who heads up, he's deputy commissioner now, but he's head of all labor relations. But MLB was expanding its workplace protection laws, our anti-harassment, non-discrimination protections, to include sexual orientation in late 2013. And I think that spurred a conversation about, hey, you know, has there ever, you know, been a player who maybe had played in the major leagues that happened to be gay or part of the LGBTQ community? And someone threw my book over to Paul Mifsud, and I think he read it, and they reached out. And it's interesting because without that leadership, then I would not have had an opportunity to invite myself back into a conversation. And for the listeners out there, it may be interesting to know that only baseball is 150 years old this year, which is amazing to think about. Mm-hmm. And in that 150-year history, only two major league players who've ever played in the major leagues, actually even one game or one inning in the mm-hmm. major leagues, have ever publicly disclosed that they were gay. And that's a gentleman named Glenn Burke, who played in the 70s for the Los Angeles Dodgers and mm-hmm. the Oakland A's, and myself. And I did not know that when I was going through, you know, my playing time. And one of the great struggles of my life was that while I should have been the happiest I'd ever been to arrive at the major leagues and achieve a lifelong dream as an athlete, is when I was trying to live a double life. And I left a marriage that I probably should have never got married to, a high school, my college girlfriend. And because all my colleagues were doing that, I was in the big leagues at 22 years old. And then I met somebody, and mm-hmm. my whole life changed. And that was before the internet. And that was before, you know, I had never had a community of friends. I didn't know really anything about myself. And I tried to live, you know, for 3 years as a member of San Diego Padres, hiding a partner who ultimately died of HIV-related causes. And I didn't even know that he was HIV positive until about, I would say, 6 weeks before he passed away. Wow. And to go through that, I had never come out to my family. My father was, my stepfather, the only father I've ever really known, is from the Midwest, was in the Marine Corps, was a cop for 25 years after that. I'm the oldest of five boys and was an athlete my whole life and never, you know, and it's just like the old, I never saw an image anywhere that I could relate to, that I didn't see someone that made me feel like, wow, maybe that person understands. And so I just, I think, tried to ignore whatever that was and was able to be social with women my whole life and had amazing relationships. But I'm in awe of this generation where people, because of information, because of the changes and progress that has been made, people are able to identify and understand themselves much younger. And I was not able to do that. And for that reason, I lived very long in the closet, and I hurt a lot of people because I was trying to please everybody and be what I was expected to be, and to be the oldest son in the major leagues at 22 and, you know, married, you know, it was like the life that everyone, that conventional photograph or, you know.
I mean, it's kind of like how every queer person imagines their life being. You have these expectations and you're conditioned to think that your life's going to look one way.
Exactly.
And then when everything shows that it's going, to name your book, going the other way, when you realize that it's going the other way and you have to deal with not only your own acceptance of self, but then realizing that you have to deal with the acceptance of others, if especially if that's what you seek out.
I never thought I would ever accept myself. When even when I was in that relationship with my partner Sam, and then to like live in shame because the people that mattered to me were my colleagues in baseball, and the only things that I'd ever heard about gays, nobody talked about LGBTQ in those days. It was just gays.
Just gays.
You know, and there were terrible stereotypes perpetuated, and the only images or, you know, it was, and I thought, wow, you know, and I think because I was in the big leagues that nobody ever accused me, called me a faggot or there just was like, nobody in the big leagues could ever be gay. It's not possible. Mm-hmm. And I think back to that statistic that I shared, the culture was such that, in two players in 150 years, there's been over 20,000 people that have, and I don't care what statistic, what side of the fence you're on, that's not a fair example of our community.
Yeah, no, I mean,
so there's a lot of people that have chosen not to share that.
And I can only imagine, because when you think about, I mean, every gay person that I know, at least gay male person I know, always has had this conversation about masculinity and whether or not you can uphold this idea of masculinity that has been placed on us by society. And it doesn't get more masculine than MLB and just literally one of the four core sports groups that we have being associated with that, and then trying to, you know, you're surrounded by other men, and then they themselves are placing their own expectations of masculinity on you. So I can see why that number is still just two.
Well, I can tell you that when I was hired, I was asked to come to New York and talk to a group of people that I still work with, all of them very closely now. But I didn't know why. I thought maybe a player was preparing to, and they wanted a perspective from me. And it was interesting because there was no specific definition for what the job was that they offered me 3 or 4 days later. And I had to think, do I really want to be, to throw myself into that? I had assumed up until 2013, you know, someone who played baseball their whole life, college baseball, played in the major league 6 years, left in the middle of his career, bilingual, played winter ball in South America 4 or 5 times. But because I was gay, I didn't even pretend to think that there was a place for me in my own sport. You know what I mean? As a career. And to their credit, they helped me see the opportunity that I could to expand conversations about respect in a more inclusive workplace. And these conversations were not topical at the beginning of 2014. The world was shifting, and we had an amazing administration running our country, and there was a acceptance from the very top, from President Obama straight on down. And I think we were ready for this opportunity, but that culture in baseball, to walk into a room where 99% of the time I'm the only openly LGBTQ person in that room, it's a gut check. You know, mm-hmm. I have to find something that those 25 players, young men who are, you know, well compensated, world class athletes, I have to find something in common that we can begin a conversation. Because as you know, and the, you know, this generation, if you don't bring the truth or the realness, you people check out. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know what, get out of my face. So as a former player, I was encouraged by Commissioner Manfred and Dan Halem to trust that that was a great ground, a starting point. And that had worked for me outside of baseball when I was around sports, and I really worked hard to try to bring education and visibility to bullying prevention education, and my passion to be a part of my community. It changed because for a while, when my story came out, I had not planned for that. I was ashamed of the way that I had lied to people for so long about myself and my family. It took a while to repair that. They were heartbroken when I stopped playing baseball with no explanation. Mm-hmm. And it's ironic that my mom and my dad, which I think a lot of the listeners can relate to, I believe that everyone's coming out process is equally difficult. And, you know, for most of us, I think our parents are the hardest hurdle because of growing up in their midst and knowing what their hopes and dreams were for their child. Mm-hmm. And not that they presume that it would be negative future if their child discloses their LGBTQ, but because they don't know a lot about it, they have worries and concerns. And mm-hmm. I think every parent wants their child to be safe and loved and connected to someone or something, and feel like they're part of this great, you know, world that we are all in. So
my dad phrased it as he had to grieve the child that he thought he was going to have, and he said, you know, look, I'm not trying to be super dramatic about this, but you know, when you were born to me and your mother, you think, you know, you have a son, the son's going to get married, he's going to have kids, that, you know, the white picket fence, it's all going to be this beautiful
more
life.
Of you with that conventional family.
And so then when I said, I'm gay, it went back to the safety thing where it's difficult for them to kind of realize that because we grew up in such a small sheltered community, that being openly queer isn't as dangerous as it was when they were growing up. But I'm curious, because we were talking about, and I should remind our listeners, you are listening to Affirmative Reaction. I'm Jorge Olivares here with Billy Bean, the ambassador for inclusion for MLB. But you talked about how when you were named as the ambassador for inclusion, you said that it brought you back to baseball. Did you genuinely feel like your spirit, that it left baseball, or has it always been with you even after you stopped
playing
professionally?
I have, you know, I think there was a little bit of an adjustment when all the guys that I played with and against retired, you know, increases, and I missed talking to my friends that are playing, you know, in a way that, you know, there was a tremendous, there was a healing period for me. You know, I was angry that I left. I felt completely empty with no plan B in life, like just wandering, because mm-hmm. I was so consumed with fear that, you know, to walk around grieving the loss of a partner, still hiding that I'm my sexual orientation. And then I went to a physician, or we did at that time, who was not well-versed in HIV education, and basically said, you're going to become HIV positive because you've been, you know, within 5 feet of someone who, like, literally, mm-hmm. like that prehistoric type stereotype. And I was walking around going to the club thinking that, and it just felt like those three things were just insurmountable, and I needed to step out. And it's, and I think one of the great privileges of my job is that I always remind myself that an athlete may never come up to me and say thank you, but if they're thinking anything along those lines, and I'm able to say, listen, there's a place for you no matter what your circumstance is, you know, I would have given anything to hear someone say that to me. And so I feel like every day that I am, I just have this great responsibility to be a great communicator to our players. And we have come so far, the consistency, the messaging in stadiums, in the clubhouse. And, you know, there's been some tough days, you know, and you know as well as I do that we are never going to have 100% acceptance on anything in this life. But that can't deter the determination. And I try to share with them that from my personal experience, the disappointment that I felt by not trusting that I was a part of this great community and this fraternity, and that we should, there's a place for each and every one of us. And trying to find that conversation that is relatable, I talk about parenting and the opportunity that when your children are sitting at your dinner table and every single thing that you say and do is going to be gospel and law to those children, because you're the most important people in their lives. Like, do you want to raise someone who's loving and accepting, or do you want to raise a bully, or do you want to perpetuate what we have over and over the years continue to turn the other cheek and say it's okay to be disparaging to women, to sexualize them as they walk in the room, to perpetuate stereotypes about LGBTQ people, or to diminish, you know, their presence and assume that they would never be equal, you know, or that we would provide a workplace that was equitable enough that they would want to work there, you know, which is the next part of the conversation and my job. And that was to go through the league, and it was by invitation only, which was incredible. I didn't realize that even in 2014 that I had played with or against, I think the number they said was 27 of the 30 major league managers that were managing actively at that time. Oh. And I had some really strong relationships that were intact because of the character that I had for the time that I played. And I forgot about that because I just assumed that the people that I had spent my entire life with, that baseball community, would always continue to look at me for the one thing that made us different instead of the 99% of the other things that made us exactly the same. And so finding that common ground has really been, you know, the common denominator for every conversation that I've tried to bring and represent around baseball.
I can only imagine, because saying that, like finding the 99% of commonality, because I'm very blessed that I work in media. Media is very LGBTQ friendly. There's a lot of coworkers that can literally just walk out of the studio, find five or six people who are queer identifying, and be able to have that thing in common. So I can only imagine when you go to work and you realize that you don't necessarily have that, but you still have relationships with people who make your job easier to do than one would imagine. But is there that longing to just like have that gay friend at work who can understand without, you know, how like we talk about people just speak that language because we're a part of the same community. Yeah. Like, do you miss that? Are you longing for that sort of?
I'm very fortunate. There's an amazing LGBTQ athletic community out there, and I have galvanized friendships over the last 15, 20 years outside of baseball. And because of the visibility of my job, it's been wonderful that there are a handful of now out people in baseball who have been a part of the game for many years who were not out before my job was announced, ironically. Mm-hmm. And I have become incredibly close with them. So I have a little bit of the best of both worlds. I think that your question is amazingly and interesting to me, because I never forget why I'm at my job when I'm at my job, because there's so much work to do still. And to be not only a leader among the baseball community, but the other sports leagues have followed suit and have really tried to emulate the efforts that we have made, and I give so much credit to our commissioner, who we have greenlit so many resources directed towards education, which I from day one I got there, I said that's the only way we're going to change the culture. You can't just stand in front of people and point at them and tell them this is what you're supposed to do. You know that better than me. We have to educate and give them examples that allow them to process and make up their own minds in a way. And that might not happen in a minute. You know, it's like, you know, a lot of us in our community, I listen to shows like yours all the time. And it's interesting that a lot of us, when we come out to people or if we come out in the workplace, something, you know, there is an expectation that everyone's going to be 100% on board right away when they've known you as this person in their mind. And it's, I find it more and more now that our community is starting to understand that there is a get to know process or an acceptance, like you just, the example you gave about your father grieving what his expectation was for his lovely child that was the smartest kid in his class and, you know, probably brought the most amazing conversations to them well before they ever thought you were, because, you know, a precocious little kid, you know, eating a grilled cheese sandwich and watching, you know, cartoons or whatever. And it's, and I think when they start to, you know, people start to get an opportunity in a safe and loving space that they can get to know all of us. Usually the outcome is awesome, but it just, it takes a little time. And I first thing I say to the players, like, we're not here to expect you guys to become experts in civil rights legislation, women's rights issues, topical things. I'm here to help you, introduce them to you and answer questions and by my own life experience and tell you like what, why it's important. You know, I'm gonna try to give you a reason to really hang your head on and say, you know what, that makes sense to me. And if it doesn't make sense to you, that's okay too. And if you want to talk about it, if you want to, you know, argue about it, that's what we're here for. You know, we are trying to provide you with resources. Ultimately, you're, you know, grown adult, you're a professional, you have a family, it's up to you. But while you're representing this sport, and this could never have taken place if all 30 clubs and their ownership had not supported the decision to put someone like me out there. The message of baseball is that we want to foster the most inclusive and respectful and accepting workplace possible. And that message was not being transmitted 15, 20 years ago. And now it is, because, and it takes time for not only the LGBTQ community, but women, women of color, the trans community, whoever, to believe, like, wow, if I'm dedicated enough and I have the enough determination and I'm interested in sports, there's a place for me to work. I can run a ball club, you know, but I need to learn about that. It's no different than what you're trying to do. There's probably, you know, little kids talking into their hairbrush, you know, emulating when they listen to you. But there is a process to learn the business side and how you get into the seat that you found yourself in right now. And we have to put ourselves out there, baseball does, and find ways to communicate to those communities. That was, to me, I felt like, if we're just waiting for a player to come out and be shouldered the entire conversation about sexual orientation, you know, among athletes, we might wait. It might be 10 more years. Who knows? There's a lot of pressure when you invite that information into someone's life, and the pressure on athletes, every athlete across the board in every sport, the pressure that you put on your body to be, you know, your instrument that that is your sole source of income. It's not like a brain. The body, you know, how you see examples all the time where it just all of a sudden starts to click. So there's a lot of variables in that decision that did not exist a long time ago. Athletes now are open season on people's commentary about it. And I'm sure that the same type of feelings were felt, you know, in the 60s and 70s and 80s and 90s, but you know, none of us ever would have heard it because you didn't have an avenue to share it. So there's just a broader consideration. And I think that for us to wait for athletes in any sport to be the ambassador of that conversation is a disservice to all the things that go into putting that product onto the field. And so for me, in our efforts with our employment initiatives, I have really, really focused on trying to make sure that LGBTQ people know that they are desired assets in baseball. And if you have an interest and you love, you know, analytics, or you love, you know, operations or player development or scouting, or, you know, there's marketing, public relations, there's broadcasting, you know, there's all
different aspects
so
of what's,
many, the
what
scale of baseball is so big because of our minor league system that there's an opportunity for you. And so the visibility of people on the business side in the front office, that is going to also move the conversation that allows the players to become much more comfortable. When I was a really young player, I remember playing in Houston Astrodome, and three female reporters came in. This is in the 80s, before you were born. The way the athletes that were on my team reacted was, not all of them, but a couple, was offensive. And they were immediately singled out, sexualized in a way. Nobody was, you know, harming them or touching them. But the comments that those three women were so brave and, like, just said, you know what, I'm going to ignore them, those people, because, you know, 90% of the people here are treating me respectfully. But I just remember I felt so ashamed of, why was that allowed, you know what I mean? And I was this young player who, you know, in our day, you were supposed to, you know, be quiet and listen. You know, it wasn't that we didn't have that empowerment.
Just do what you're told,
or entitlement.
You're being paid
that
to do a certain job, make sure you do that job.
Yeah. And so I think when I share those experiences as a former player with the players, a lot of the players look down and they're like, wow, that's awful. And I'm not going to perpetuate that. You know, it's like we've all been in a room. Well, for those of us who have ever lived in the closet, I don't know if you ever were, but you've heard your buddies make comments about faggots and queers and da da da, you know, because they didn't assume that the guy that in the room who they love just as much, that they were represented. It's no different than guys making jokes about women that are, you know, unacceptable, or making comments about, you know, your religious, you know, beliefs, or, you know, when you're not represented, or racial, you know, and, you know, baseball is a sport of Jackie Robinson, and the fuel to be a leader is so fierce and so powerful that I am, it's like, you know, we talk about how much time has passed. It feels like just yesterday that I started, and I have really been able to forge wonderful working relationships with all 30 organizations, which are 30 separate companies, basically, all fighting for the same, you know, prize, and run differently by different ownership, different perspective. And I just feel like baseball has a lot to be proud of. You know, every athlete that puts on a jersey has a chance to promote or hurt the sport by what they say or what they do. And the scale of our game, we had 8,000 athletes pull on a professional baseball jersey last year in 2018. Dang. That's a lot of people. And it's so much bigger than any other sport because of the scale of our minor league system and our player development. And baseball, it doesn't matter if you're the fastest guy, the strongest guy, the tallest guy, or whatever, or gal, or whoever. It is a hard sport. And part of that opportunity that baseball sees now when we are putting the sport in front of our youth, we have Play Ball and RBI initiatives, is that we can talk about bullying prevention education and feeling connected and talking to you know, your parents or somebody that you trust if something isn't going right, if you're walking to school, walking home, you know, things like that, that these ancillary amazing opportunities to impact lives, millions of lives that don't necessarily result in being the center fielder for the New York Yankees or the shortstop for the New York Mets.
Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to take a short little break. When we come back, we'll have more with Billy Bean. And also, you can follow, make sure you go to MLB's website and make sure you go to follow their social media page, see all the stuff that they're doing, especially with regards to this push for inclusion. We're going to take a short little break. We'll come back after this.
Didn't catch it all? Missed an interview? Have no fear. Progress is always available when you need it. On demand at SiriusXM.com/on demand and on the SiriusXM app.
Not play Mana. here on SiriusXM. You're listening to Affirmative Reaction here on SiriusXM Progress Channel 127. I'm your host, Jorge Olivares, here in studio with Billy Bean, who is the ambassador for the Major League Baseball with regards to inclusion, to make sure that that space is open to any member of the LGBTQ community and how they can best feel like this sport is for them. So I'm curious, you left in 1995. Do you remember that last game? Do you remember kind of dropping the bat, taking off the helmet, and realizing that it was it for that particular phase in your life?
Honestly, I was grieving the loss of my partner.
The legend is that you were unable to attend your partner's
funeral. That's the truth.
Funeral.
Yeah, that's one of the things that when my story came out in 99, mm-hmm. I had been out of baseball for a while. And I remember being so afraid that if someone found out that what they would think of me, I had a game that day and I didn't even tell my parents about my partner. You know what I mean? Like I just literally put it in my back pocket and shoved it in, you know, like I just found a way. I think because the baseball is so intense and the emotional commitment it takes to be 162 days a year and to be around these amazing athletes. And I was always kind of like the second or third worst guy on the team in the big leagues because I mean, it was great to be there, but I always was reminded that these guys are so great. And so what that means is that I was always afraid I'd be sent to the minor leagues or I wasn't good enough, or, you know, and when you don't get to play a lot, like every day, it's like when you see tennis players warm up, even though they just warmed up and they still get to warm up. And you wonder why do athletes are like that? Like, mm-hmm. And so if you're not playing, trying to hit 100-mile-an-hour fastball is not easy. It's hard to do when you do play all the time. So when you're a backup player, which is what I was, like a utility player. But to your question, I had no plan to stop playing after 95. I think the structure of the season, I didn't have time to fall apart. And what was weird is that I did not want to live in my house anymore. My partner, I found him at home. It was after a night game, and I rushed him to the emergency room. I wasn't sure if he was conscious when I walked in the door, and the front door was open, which we had a rule that was not, because I lived in this really kind of cool community in Del Mar, California, and we were hiding that we were a couple, so. Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm like running in there and I'm like, I knew something was up, and rushed him to the hospital, and he started to come forward, and they revived him and sadly passed away holding my hand about 6:30 in the morning, the next morning. And it's just so hard to explain, like when you have a relationship that is, I disrespected it in so many ways. I loved him with all my heart, but I pretended it didn't exist to everyone. And so when he was just taken out of that equation for a minute, I just literally kind of pretended that it just disappeared or something. It was a naive, awful choices continuing to make to try to, again, please people that I thought had expectations that I needed to meet as opposed to my internal wellness. Mm-hmm. And so at the end of that year, when this, you know, having, it was, he died the night before opening day. So I had the whole season. And it just seemed like it was 10 years that season. And I played angry. I used to drive to the park. I'd sit in the parking lot and I would put on a certain couple songs that would force me to get my emotions out. And I would really try to vet that. And then I would turn into Billy being the baseball player and jovial and, you know, with the guy. 'Cause everyone can tell if you're not right, mm-hmm. you know? And And I was heartbroken, man. I still miss him. You know, I mean, I don't like to think about it all the time, but when I do, it breaks me up a little bit because I didn't get a chance to ever find out where that relationship could go. We were together 3 years, but he was wonderful to me, taught me so many things, and I didn't get a chance to say goodbye. And then to not go to his funeral and things like that, like those are just scars that don't heal emotionally for me. And when the season ended in 95, I could not go back to my house. I didn't want to. I was on the road most of the time. A couple times I even checked into a hotel, like a junky hotel, just to sleep in a different bed and get to the next day. Like mm-hmm. It was like a day-to-day thing. And then I went to visit a friend in Miami Beach, someone I had known. And I just thought, you know what? I'm just going to hang out there, and I'm going to get in shape and work out and off-season stuff. And I thought about going, sit down, talk to my parents. And every time I just changed my mind, they thought I was really – something was off. Mm-hmm. And they could tell I was down. And I just didn't talk to them at all, basically, you know.
Isolation usually helps whenever people are trying to figure out what life means, right. Specifically after an incident like that.
And so when spring training rolled around the next February, the expectation that I was going to come to camp and I just did not go. Mm-hmm. And I had one or two uncomfortable conversations with my agent. Professional sports are a privilege to play, and nobody, unless you are Derek Jeter, really cares if you show up, because there's a long line of people that want to be where you are. Mm-hmm. And I was no all-star, and I wasn't, the Padres' future wasn't hanging on my participation. And it made me feel even worse that I didn't go back, but I was still not sure what was going on with me. And I didn't ask for help, of course. You know, I thought that's what, weak people do. And mm-hmm. and then next thing I know, I look up and it's 2 months into, the spring training, and I'm watching games on television, and I'm like, wow, that was a really stupid decision. And decisions were made, players come, and I just felt like I got a long journey ahead of me. I don't know, what to do, but I went through, I guess it was depression or something, which I didn't understand, which I think, a lot of us deal with that when you isolate yourself. And my whole identity was wrapped around that wearing that uniform and mm-hmm. people wanting my autograph and my statistics in the newspaper or whatever, And I had to grow up, and that's what happened. So there was no fanfare, I did it. 10 years of this, most of my career, which I think took me a long time. And I think it allows me to be a good communicator among players, because I always say there's the best coaches in the world around here. You have all these, video visuals and stuff. The only piece of advice that I give an athlete is to play as long as you can, as long as your, body allows you to, and take care of it, mm-hmm. Get the most, because that's what you're going to miss when you stop. I don't care if you play 1 year or 20 years. It hurts, because it's like if you love what you do right now, the mm-hmm. fact that you couldn't do it would be painful. It's not a job. It's your life.
It's kind of if you believe in sort of the spiritual terms of it, it's a vocation. Like you feel like you're so called to do it that if you don't do it, then there's something that's missing from you. And to that effect, I'm curious, would you say that baseball is the greatest love of your life, or is it?
It's the longest running love of my life. That's a great question. Nobody's ever asked me that before. That is, and I think that. I think here's a good example. A lot of relationships, marriages suffer in sports. It's very sexy for an athlete to meet a perfect specimen human being and people to match up. But I think most athletes, if you're a figure skater, if you're a baseball player, if you're a basketball player, if you're a swimmer, a golfer, or a long distance runner, you love that more than you love your relationship, because you have to persevere through so many things. And it's not that it's your design, you want it to be that way, but to rise to, like, you see someone who is just hungry to reach the top in entertainment, you know, that you make sacrifices that don't always align with someone else's life or where mm-hmm. they are. And I think for me, I loved baseball more than I loved myself almost. And I put my relationship in such a bad spot. I didn't even think my parents would accept me, that I lost someone that I loved, because I couldn't really explain it. I hadn't mm-hmm. gone through enough life experience to reach self-acceptance. I thought my generation associated gay with HIV and death.
I'm dying.
I have a perspective and a life experience that might be a little different than yours, because there was heroes that fought till they were no longer here to move conversations in a place where we were able to advance medicine to help people live with something that is so random. And it's, you know what I mean? It mm-hmm. just, and we're getting closer and closer to a day where it doesn't have to have that fear connected to it. It could just be something that is manageable, completely manageable, or altogether disappear. But in the 80s, for me to leave a marriage and go be with a man, that would be hard for people to understand. I didn't even understand it. I just followed my heart, and I still can't explain it very well, I guess. But the way the world changes, like those experiences give me the confidence and courage to walk into a room to try to be an influencer in a way where I have to be willing to accept that these people may judge me, they may not like me. I know in my heart, if they got to know me, they would like me. You can't be best friends with everybody in the world. Mm-hmm. You know, like some of your listeners, they may be so frustrated by your perspective that they think they don't like you, and they've made up their mind. You know what I mean? And so, yeah. But for the people that, and I believe goodness, and you know, there's a sense of goodness in everyone, that for the most part, you can, by being an example that is respectful and relatable, you can influence people in a way that broadens their mind and heart.
Is it easier? Did you ever have a conversation with your loved ones once you came out that gave you the satisfaction you needed after realizing that you couldn't have been as honest with them as you wanted to before?
Yeah, it took a while. It was so ironic. I thought my stepfather was going to be really, really affected negatively by that. And he turned out to be, I think in his heart, he was relieved that it wasn't something more serious, or like, 'cause he just thought my son is not doing well. Mm-hmm. And my fear. And my mom told me that they were more heartbroken that I quit playing baseball than by any revelation. Without trusting, they know how much I loved that sport. I said no to all the bad things in life and dedicated myself, because I had to, or I never would have made it. Mm-hmm. I wasn't good enough to be half in. And to this day, if we sit down and we look at each other like this and we start talking about that time, she still can't get through a conversation without getting really emotional and starting to cry, because she was a young single mom when I was born. She's 17 or mm-hmm. 18, and we were friends as well as mother and child. You know, we lived alone until she remarried my stepfather, and they're mm-hmm. still married now when I was a young kid. But I think she just feels like, as a mom, you know, she wasn't able to be there because I didn't allow it. It's like I left baseball, but baseball didn't discriminate against me. I just was very observant and listened to. It's like when you're, you know, identify as female and you walk into a room and you hear people making sexist comments, you know, sexualizing women, guys who think it's really cool, you know, or whoever, you're more sensitive to those comments. Mm-hmm. Or if you're a person of color and you hear someone make a comment about, you know, leaders in this country who are disparaging to people that those things, they sting a little bit deeper. And so I think that if I would have just trusted my family a little bit more, it would the whole course of my life would have changed. And I don't know, you know, it's I've had some really heavy conversations with people in baseball and sports, and they're like, it went down the way it did, Billy, because you're meant to do what you're doing. That's the way we look at it. Mm-hmm. So there's a sense of gratitude that I made it through all that, and now we're affecting a larger amount of people in a way that, as a former player, MLB Network made this amazing video of me playing and highlights and things, and these players see me as a player.
Mm-hmm.
We, no matter what they think before those conversations start, we have that in common. And there is a great fraternity of respect,
mm-hmm.
because we all know how hard it was to fight through those channels to get
to
there.
Get to that spot.
Yeah.
You are listening to Affirmative Reaction. I'm Jorge Olivares. We're going to take one last little break. We'll come back. We'll have a couple more minutes with Billy, and we'll find out how, if you're interested, especially if you're somebody in the queer community who wants to work for MLB, how there are ways you can do that. We'll be right back. Waiting for
is this me, Tieta?
There we go. Yeah,
I love
Billy
this song.
B knowing. You're listening to Affirmative Reaction here on SiriusXM Progress Channel 127. I'm your host, Jorge Olivares. Very happy to have spent the past hour with Billy Bean, the Ambassador for Inclusion for MLB. And for, like I mentioned, for people who are curious about how, especially if they're a member of the LGBTQ community, how they can be helpful to MLB, or they can maybe work with you, what are ways in which people can find out about all this information?
Well, the first step is that we have great presence on LinkedIn, our MLB.com/careers. We have the Office of the Commissioner, we have MLB.com, and we have MLB Network. So we have three central offices, and we have links to all 30 clubs with all job postings. And there we have an amazing HR department. But if people want to just reach out to me, Billy Bean at Major League Baseball in New York City, I will do whatever I can to help promote LGBTQ, people that are looking for an opportunity. You know, if your education meets qualifications, it is our diversity initiatives in our employment practices It's never a better time to pursue opportunities. Baseball is a wonderful career. You got to be willing to maybe travel and
be on the road.
And I would suggest that you love baseball a little bit because you're going to see a lot of it. But it's super exciting. And again, I will do whatever I can. I've been championing our community. And the visibility from my job has created many more people that have been able to make that choice to come out and while they're employed in baseball. And it's just been great all around.
Nice. Well, thank you for spending the past hour with me.
Thank you.
Been such a great conversation. Thanks to those of you who have been listening.
I think what you guys do is amazing. I really do.
I appreciate that. Yeah. And so you can listen to this conversation again on demand, and you can listen to all SiriusXM programming, especially if you go to our app. I'm Jorge Olivares. Go to heyjorge.com for more. But until then, hasta luego.